Would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Ryan Kennedy from Evangelism.
And I'm Mac from Evangelism.
I've got Toronto now, but then in the mix is Montreal, Nashville, Brooklyn, Japan. You got a single out, you got these cars, you got this boombox, you got... What I'm getting at is that sometimes with revisionist history, with bigger acts, I can go for hours and see if the internet can tell me anything, but you have hid behind basically your song bio and your band bio, and there ain't nothing else. Let's start with this. Is this a duo, a project, a band, or a burrito? What is this thing?
It's a band.
It is a band, okay.
Yeah, it's a band. Yeah. I mean, it's a band with two people in it, and we don't want any more. But it's a band for sure.
I am suspecting that there's something deep in the 90s grunge reject there that tells me that you didn't just kind of fall out of the apple cart here. Because you don't come out of the gate with something this well-crafted if you don't know something.
Well, thanks, Dennis. Yeah, I have had a long life of... I was supposed to be a lot of things. I've signed record deals and had people tell me that I was going to be something and kick that can down the road and never was. And that's where some of that travel comes from. That's where some of those opening slots come from. The crazy opportunities that I've had in my life are awesome, but it never amounted to something that I was super proud of and long lasting. And I seem to keep getting kicks at the can. And here we are now with Evangelism, trying to kick that can a little further down the road. But yeah, I mean, I have been doing this a long time.
To contrast, Ryan, I'm the guy that nobody thought was going to be a big deal. No, I'm kidding.
That's not totally accurate.
No. I grew up in rock and roll, a lesser degree than Ryan, but always playing in some pretty dirty rock bands. And then I moved to Nashville, and I was a songwriter for almost 10 years. And that went well enough to keep my head above water, but I was missing some of the personal creative reward in the music I was writing. So only within the last, I guess, year and a bit have I come back, and Ryan and I have, you know, sort of reconnected, and it was pretty evident that we needed to be making something together. So that's where it went for me.
Where does Toby Keith fall in all of this? Let's just get this over with.
I mean, first off, I got to say, like, the bio, there's a healthy element of taking the piss in everything that Evangelism does.
No way.
Yeah. Surprise, no. Surprise. Including that bio. Toby Keith is really a nod to the type of people that Jordan crossed paths with.
I get it.
Or Mac crossed paths with in Nashville there.
So. Let's go backwards. Are you both from Toronto? Music training, all that sort of goop that before all this other stuff.
I mean, I have no music training.
Or training whatsoever. I get it. Yeah.
Not really.
He's a great musician.
Do you need to know how to play? You just play, right?
But Toronto originally?
Yeah, pretty much in this area. Born in Ontario, lived in Ontario most of my life, with the exception of living in Japan.
But got it.
Yeah, pretty much Toronto. Jort?
Yep, same. Absolutely. Grew up just outside of Toronto, sort of where we are now, and moved away for a bit, but this was home for a long time.
You come back from Nashville after this lauded career in songwriting and co-songwriting, and you have been through all your chops and all of this. Where did the two of you kind of look at each other and say, okay, what are we going to do? And how did you have that conversation? How do you get to this?
It's actually kind of odd, but we're in two separate projects, and we were traveling to New York every month and a half, something like that, doing shows. And we were traveling in the same car, loading in the same gear, using each other's stuff, playing one after the other. And it just became very apparent to us that we should just be doing one thing together. Even as far as getting visas for work visas for border and that, it would really, you know, make the whole thing easier in that regard. But yeah, we just felt overwhelmed with that feeling that the two of us should actually just try something together. And it was freaky and scary. I mean, I didn't think it was going to work.
I mean, I don't think you can tell the story of that without at least nodding to what's going on in the world, right? Like, we had tour dates in the States that we had to cancel individually. And then we're like everyone else sitting at home going, okay, now we have time and what are we going to do with it? And the plans that we had were put on hold. So we made new plans, and that included starting something together.
What were the things, like, were there three or four things that when you were sitting there at the theoretical bar that you kind of said, well, I want to do this. Well, I want to do this. Well, it should be this. And then where did it kind of overlap into this? Let me in a little bit on the discussion.
Yeah. It's a great question because I really haven't.
The first thing is no ego.
Yeah, that was
like
the first thing.
We're not joking. That's the first thing that we said to each other, no ego. Because you have two people that are used to writing songs and implementing their singular vision for their solo projects. And that's just not going to work when you put us together. So there's more to it, but we still have to repeat that to ourselves as we're writing and mixing and doing all that stuff.
Absolutely.
It cannot be about ego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the sound was sort of, you know, there's a couple of things that play with that. One is that we wanted something that played to our talents, you know, our better skills in each of us. And it turns out that our hearts in music have always kind of grown up in 90s grunge era. And that was something we love, and we wanted to have something rocky, and we just figured, you know, it's time for us to use everything we've learned and everything that we feel we do well and put that in the forefront.
I think it's important that the people who are listening know that you did this out of love and passion for an era, not out of, well, let's see if we put the algorithms together and we do the right beat and we make the lyrics about this in this political moment in time, then maybe we can just get the right amount of streams to pay for the dog food. You didn't go at it that way.
No, not at all. I mean, this is something that I'm open to talk about at this point in my life, but this is where it gets weird. Like in other bands, I wouldn't talk about this. Like I'm 40 years old. So, and I grew up in a strict Pentecostal home where I was only allowed to listen to Christian music. So by the time I was sneaking records in, it was 1992. That era of music was the one that hit me. So because of that, because I did live through it, it's not some like, yeah, it's not algorithmic, you know, play here where we're going, oh, this is really popular at this moment. Let's try our hand at this. That's what I grew up on.
Yeah. And I lived in that sort of algorithmic thing with songwriting in Nashville, trying to, you know, interpret what was popular, what was going to be popular next. And it honestly just sickens me at this point.
What a perfect time for Christian DJ. Could this be a more, I mean, when you were talking about what you were going to come out of the gate with, obviously you grew up Pentecostal, so there's obviously some history there. But again, there's a lot of irony. There's a lot of attitude, and there's most certainly no lack of judgment, I would venture to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, that's pretty autobiographical, that song, for me. Yeah, my first job really was as a Christian DJ at a roller skating rink, and I really was the ring bearer for a wedding when I was, you know, 10, and they bought me The Music Machine on vinyl, which is a kid's Christian record. And I said to my dad, I do not want this. And he took me back to the Christian bookstore and I traded it in. Do you know Petra?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And they had a record called Back to the Streets that looked like Boston's first record with a spaceship guitar.
Had you heard of them at this point?
I had never heard of them. I just walked in and saw the spaceship guitar and thought, no.
That's the same reason everybody bought Boston in 76, by the way. But
right,
anyway.
Right. So in Christian DJ, Petra is replaced with Shake Your Money Maker for effect, because that was one of the early secular records that I bought. But I mean, I lived a lot of that stuff, and the stuff I didn't live, I felt. So I would say that, yes, there's some judgment there. I also feel some judgment when I sing it in a different way, if that makes any sense.
3 weeks of recording songs, and let's just get right to it. And I'm not, here's the first thing someone's going to assume. that the concept of recording in two cars was a gimmick. That's the first thing they're going to talk about. And I assume it was more of a necessity.
Absolutely it was.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, we would, it was at the early onset of the COVID stuff. And, you know, that's a time when you could be fined for hanging out too close with someone or whatever. So we found this dead end road between our two houses. We live in different towns, not far from each other. And we would pull up about 6 to 8 feet away in our cars, facing different directions, and we would sanitize a mic cable and throw it across between the cars, and then sanitize the headphone cable. And I'd be in my car with the laptop and a bass or something, and Ryan would be in his vehicle with his microphone, and it was essentially was your vocal booth.
It took some time, not only to get sounds and performances, because like that's the first time I've recorded vocals for a song sitting down with a seatbelt on.
Jeez. Nice of you to wait. Let's go right back. You weren't moving.
No, I know, but I always wear a seatbelt. You know.
What a yeah. See, you were.
Here's
you
a PSA.
Were,
no, but
were,
I just
you were
forgot
brought
to
up
unbuckle
well,
it.
Weren't you?
I do remember recording vocals and thinking I didn't even take my seatbelt off.
Yeah, we'd be sitting down this dead end road for 3 hours, and like my hands are still on the wheel and his seatbelt's on. It's like, oh yeah, right.
Oh, that's right. Oh, right. I'm not moving. But what is the filter for evangelism song when you're writing, when you're talking about it, when you're starting to produce? How do you know it's a song for this band?
For me, we both have to like it. So that's that ego thing that has to be removed from the equation, because I could write a song myself and Mac could not like it and vice versa. So if we don't both like it, if it doesn't give us the feels, as we say sometimes, it's not going to be an evangelism song. And then there is also, for me, lyrically, there is something that feels like evangelism. And it's when I am being as honest as I can be, dropping literal references in songs, which is actually like a relatively new thing for me. I've written a lot of baby love songs in my life and then got tired of doing that. And now I'm trying to write in a more honest and open way. And that to me is something that is pretty integral to evangelism. And then I don't know how you feel, Mac. What makes evangelism song for you?
I have no idea. I'm still trying to figure it out.
We are still trying to figure it out. Yeah.
But label, manager, publicist, all these lovely toys, are you putting all that together? And is the goal here to make this a thing versus a, we're here in COVID and, you know, because obviously you're putting some time into it. So tell me a little bit about all the, you know, the industry business.
Well, it's definitely it's a goal to make it a thing, as neither one of us could do music as some sort of hobby or part-time thing. But the problem has been in the past that we have got the team before we had the thing. So we don't want to do that again.
Fair.
We want to make the thing and then get the team. Because once when you do it that way, the team can help push the thing, but the amount of influence they can exert over the thing is not as much. So it was important that the first thing that we did is not go out and look for a manager or a label, not only because, you know, we don't want that influence right now, but we didn't need it with what we can record on our own. And, you know, when you do things for a long time, you know, some people like Newman, and you don't need to have a label to go to Newman. And there are people that still believe, like you do, in music that they like and will champion it. So a team, I don't want to do all the business stuff ourselves for the rest of our lives. I want to focus on
other
stuff.
No, you don't.
No, I don't.
Believe me.
It's draining at times. But
oh,
I also
I know.
Don't want the wrong team.
What went wrong? Tell me a couple of stories of like, you know, like did the police show up? Is there anything good and juicy, or is I'm doing my clickbait here now? I mean, I want to know.
Oh yeah, that's a great question. What went wrong? I mean, people would come down. It turned out that this dead end was actually a popular local dumping spot for garbage, leaves, yard waste, all sorts of stuff. So
yes.
Often people would come down the end of the road, and we would have to move. Like we'd have to unplug the cables and move the car so they could get through. Really annoying. Yeah. And they all start thinking, like, who are these weird looking rocker dudes? Is this a drug deal? Is this a sexual thing? What's going on here?
And it was all of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm hoping. Definitely
freaked the locals out.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside, and then songs by others in between.